It's our Youth Expression Showcase Hour continuing here at the Saturday Light Brigade. And I'm really pleased. I was joking before about Elizabeth Ann Irvin, who is here. Seems like just yesterday she was born to Alan and Laura, and she's here now to do some monologues this morning. And we'll talk a little bit about her passion for telling stories and presenting monologues, and also get to know her a little bit throughout the coming moments. But I thought it would be great to simply begin with, I was going to say what she does best. I have a feeling that Elizabeth does a lot of things best, but one of the things she does best. So let's welcome Elizabeth Irvin.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Irvin. This first piece I'll be doing is an Irish story about two giants. Finn McCool and the Scottish giant were always arguing about who is the best giant, who is the strongest, who is the bravest. But every time the Scottish giant asked Finn to fight, Finn would always come up with some excuse, like, oh, I have to go help my grandma with the laundry, or oh, I have to help my mom with the dishes, or something like that. So finally, one day, the Scottish giant finally said, all right, tomorrow we're fighting, and that's that. Well, Finn went home to his wife, Ulna, that night, and he said, oh, what am I going to do? The Scottish giant will kill me. Well, his wife said, now don't you worry. I'll take care of it. I just want you to go in and pretend you're a baby, all right? And Finn said yes, and when tomorrow came around, he got into a cradle and wrapped himself up like a baby, and the Scottish giant came marching over from Scotland. He came up to the door and pounded on the door. Finn! Finn, let me in, Finn! Well, Ulna came up to the door, and she poked her head out and said, excuse me, sir, are you looking for Finn? Well, the Scottish giant was feeling very foolish. And he said, oh, why, yes, I am. Is he home, ma'am? She said, oh, no, that's a shame. He just went out. But come on in and sit at the table. He might be back at any time. So the Scottish giant came in, and he sat at the table. Now, all that yelling had got him really thirsty, and he kept glancing over at the empty water jug on the table. And Ulna caught one of those glances, and she said, oh, that's a shame. If Finn were here, he'd just go out and squeeze the rocks for water. Well, the Scottish giant said, anything Finn can do, I can do. So he picked up the water jug and he walked outside. And he set it down and he looked around for a good-looking rock. And he picked it up and he started to squeeze and squeeze and squeeze until finally it exploded in a cloud of dust and debris and not one drop of water. That must have just been a bad rock, he said to himself. So he looked around, and he picked up another good rock, and he started to squeeze and squeeze and squeeze until finally it exploded in a cloud of dust and debris, and not one drop of water. That must have been another bad rock, he said. So he picked up another rock and tried again, but again there was no water. Finally he had to conclude that there was something Finn could do that he could not. And he picked up the empty water jug and walked inside. Ulna saw the empty water jug and said, oh, now that's a shame. And she went back to cooking. Well, after a while, she noticed that the Scottish giant was looking very hot from all that exertion. Oh, that's a shame, she said. If Finn were here, he'd pick up the house and turn it around to catch the breeze. Well, the Scottish giant said, anything Finn can do, I can do. So he walked outside, and he studied the house for a moment, and he put one hand under a window sill here and another under a flower box over here, and he started to lift and push and strain and lift, and the house did not budge. He stepped back again, and he studied the house. And he put one hand in the doorway and one under the roof, and he started to lift and push and strain, and the house did not move. Finally, he had to conclude that there was something else Finn could do that he could not. So he walked inside, and he sat down, and Ulna came over with a plate of perfectly golden brown biscuits and set it down in front of him, and set another plate down in front of a baby that he hadn't noticed before. "You were looking a bit hot, so I made you something to eat." He thanked her, and she went back to doing what she was doing. And he could see that baby reach up one hairy, ugly arm and grab two or three of those biscuits, and it just started tossing them back. Well, that was enough for him. He picked up one of those golden brown biscuits, and he bit down as hard as he could. And oh, it hurt. And he could taste blood in his mouth, and there were two of his teeth that had broken. Well, now, at this point, I should tell you a little secret. You see, in every one of those biscuits in front of the Scottish giant, there was a small stone in front of the baby. There wasn't any. Well, the Scottish giant decided that must have been a burnt biscuit, so he picked up another one, and he bit down. And he could taste blood in his mouth again, and there was two more of his teeth. Well, finally he decided he wasn't hungry, and he pushed the plate away, and he just sat there. And eventually the baby sat up crying and caterwauling. Well, Ulna said from her place by the stove, "Oh, could you check on the baby for me, please? I got my hands full here." Well, he said, all right, and he walked over, and he looked at the baby. There was nothing wrong with it that he could see. "Could you check his teeth? He might be teething," Ulna called from her place over by the stove. Well, the Scottish giant stuck his two fingers down into that baby's mouth, and that baby had the hardest, boniest gums that he had ever felt. And then the baby bit down on his fingers. He pulled out two bloody stumps. The baby had bit off his fingers. Well, that was enough for him. If this was what the baby was like, he didn't want to find out what the father was like. So he hightailed it out of there as fast as he could, and Finn jumped up from the cradle and he ran after him. And Ulna looked out and said, "Oh, that's a shame," and went back to her cooking.
That was Elizabeth Irvin, and I'm going to adjust your mic a little here. Just to make it a little better for talking, that's a little better. Now, tell me first of all, how old are you?
I am 13 years old.
And how did you develop a passion for storytelling?
Mostly through my dad.
And Alan, your dad is a very well-versed storyteller. When you tell stories, what do you think about?
Well, mostly I try to think about the story as I'm telling it.
Mm-hmm. Do you change it sometimes or change the way you tell it?
I do. Each telling is a bit different.
And what makes it different is you do that? And that might be kind of a weird question, but does it depend on how you feel or maybe what the people listening to you are telling you as they listen? What inspires you to make the changes that you make?
Well, mostly it is kind of like what I feel and what the people listening feel. But it's also kind of like if I find something that works really well, I keep it. But like if I find something that I feel I could change, I change it.
So you get to experiment a little bit and sort of optimize what it is that you're doing. Before I forget, would you like to acknowledge anybody or say hello to anybody who might be listening?
Oh, I'd like to say hi to my mom and my dad and friends of mine that may be listening.
Excellent. I'm sure they are. And where do you go to school?
I go to Kappa 6 through 12.
Excellent. And do you have a major there yet, or an intended major?
I major in theater. It's musical theater, but...
Oh, very good. Well, I'm eager to hear you tell another story. What would you like to tell next?
Actually, I have a monologue worked up.
Ah, okay. And do you need to set it up at all beforehand?
I probably should. It's from Cymbeline, which is a Shakespeare play. It's one of the lesser well-known ones, and it's about this woman who has her love go away, and her love makes a bet with this other guy that he can't get her to love him. And this other guy, he sets it up so it looks like he was able to get her to fall in love with him. So her husband gets really mad at this because he thinks she's false. So at this point in the play, he's sent a servant to kill her, but the servant can't hold it in any longer.
I see. I can't wait to hear it. Here again, Elizabeth Irvin.
Why, I must die. And if I do not by thy hand, thou art no servant of thy master's. Against self-slaughter there is a prohibition so divine that craven's my weak hand. Come, here's my heart. Something's afoot. Soft, soft, will no defense. Obedient as the scabbard. What is here? The scriptures of the loyal Leonidas all turned to heresy? Away, away, corruptors of my faith. You shall no more be stomachers to my heart. Thus may poor fools believe false teachers. Though those that are betrayed do feel the treason sharply, yet the traitor stands in worse case of woe. And thou, Posthumus, thou that didst set up my disobedience against the king my father, and make me put into contempt the suits of princely fellows, shalt hereafter find it is no act of common passage, but a strain of rareness. And I grieve myself to think, when thou shalt be disedged by her that now thou tirest on, how thy memory will then be panged by me. Prithee, dispatch. The lamb entreats the butcher. Where's thy knife? Thou art too slow to do thy master's bidding when I desire it too. Wherefore then didst undertake it? Why hast thou abused so many miles with a pretense? This place, mine action and thine own, our horse's labor, the time inviting thee, the perturbed court for my being absent, whereunto I never purpose return. Why hast thou gone so far to be unbent, when thou hast ta'en thy stand the elected deer before thee?
Very nice. Do you like Shakespeare?
I do.
Have you gone to see many plays?
I've been going to see lots of plays recently.
Where do you go? What companies do you go to see?
Well, I go to see a lot of Pittsburgh Shakespeare in the parks. I also just go to, like, any Shakespeare plays that I might have tickets for.
That's good. What about online? Are there plays? You know, it never occurred to me to look to YouTube or, you know, other potential places. Is there anything there to look at? I know it's not the same as live, but...
There probably is. I don't think I've ever checked there.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to think about. This is Elizabeth Irvin, who's here with us. And what do you have prepared next?
I have the... a prologue to Romeo and Juliet.
Ah, and that's one I think some people will probably recognize. It's interesting, you're juxtaposing probably one of the most well-known plays of Shakespeare with one of the lesser-known ones, maybe the most least-known ones that you just did prior. Whenever you're ready, go ahead.
Right. Two households, both alike in dignity, in fair Verona, where we lay our scene. From ancient grudge break to new mutiny, where civil blood makes civil hands unclean. From forth the fatal loins of these two foes, a pair of star-crossed lovers take their life, whose misadventured piteous overthrows do with their death bury their parents' strife. The fearful passage of their death marked love, and the continuance of their parents' rage, which but their children's end not could remove, is now the 2 hours' traffic of our stage. The which, if you with patient ears attend, what here shall miss, our toil, shall strive to mend.
Mm. Have you seen that play?
Yes.
How many times, do you know?
I forget.
But a lot, right? Multiple times. Do you have a favorite scene?
I really like the death scene of Mercutio. Mm.
Yeah, that is a good scene. We're getting a lot of notes from people, which is why I was looking over there saying how good you sound and how terrific it is to hear you. How do you practice when you're how do you perfect a reading? One thing that occurs to me is you might practice in front of a mirror, or you might really just think through the words. I mean, do you have any tips for people that might want to become better at presenting monologues or stories?
Well, I really try to get to understand the words. My dad helps me a bit with that.
That's important. If you're reading something you can't understand, and I can tell you that from my own personal experience, that's really true.
And I try to get the emotional feel right for it before I, like, perfect the words exactly.
And when you're interacting with other people, with your own words, do you find that these skills help you be more expressive or maybe show restraint or the right emotion? I would think this would make you, I mean, you're heading towards this as a career possibly given your major at Kappa, but I would think it would be good just for everyday life.
Yeah, it is. It does help.
Excellent. Well, what would you like to do next? I think you have two more, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And while you're preparing, I'm just going to say you're listening to the show that gets your weekend off to a good start. It's 11 o'clock, the Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings at 88.3 WRCT Pittsburgh, 90.1 WIUP FM Indiana, 90.7 WMCO New Concord, Ohio, 91.1 WSAJ Grove City, 91.7 WNJR Washington, 91.7 WCUC Clarion, PCTV, Comcast 21, Verizon 47, Pittsburgh, and live and on demand at slbradio.org, where it's always Saturday. I'm just going to make a quick little adjustment here, Elizabeth, if you give me just a moment to do that. And I'm almost there. It's not the kind of thing, you know, when you're telling stories, you have to concentrate so much. I'm usually able to do two things at once here on the air, but every now and then I've got to do one thing at once. There, I did it. And now it's time for your, I don't know if you have a monologue or a story.
I have, I'm going to do Mercutio's death speech.
Oh, okay. Whenever you're ready.
No, 'tis not so deep as a well, nor so wide as a church door, but 'tis enough, 'twill serve. Ask for me tomorrow, and you shall find me a grave man. I am peppered, I warrant, for this world. A plague of both your houses. Zounds, a dog, a rat, a mouse, a cat, to scratch a man to death. A braggart, a rogue, a villain that fights by the book of arithmetic. Why the devil came you between us? I was hurt under your arm.
Very good. Gosh. Do you write?
I write some.
And have you presented anything you've written?
Not really. I normally don't finish the things I'm writing.
And I think it would... I think you have to kind of be in the right frame of mind to do that, too. What kinds of things do you like to write?
I like to write, like, fantasy and short stories that come to mind.
Do you find you get stuck, or what makes them hard to finish?
I normally, like, don't have enough time. I can't write fast enough, so my brain races ahead and, like, gets the next part of the story and the next before I can write down the first part of the story.
I have that problem too sometimes. It's really frustrating. I always describe it as, and especially, I have a feeling you're probably a faster typer than I am, but I'm not very fast at all. And I always joke that I wish I could just go, you know, take the keys and go flap and put my hand straight, and then everything I'm thinking would immediately go down. I don't know if you could relate to that, but I really have trouble. Do you ever try to talk them out to get them done?
I try to, but I normally don't.
Yeah, it's not the same. It's hard. Well, we're going to do one last piece. Is there anything you'd like to say or anybody you'd like to acknowledge? This will be kind of our last chance to talk in between.
Well, I'd like to acknowledge my theater teacher, Miss Lotta.
Oh, Chris Lotta, one of my favorite people. And we could, like, sing a TV theme song together for her or do something like that. But has she been working with you?
Yeah.
She's great. She really is a great person to have. Anybody else? I don't mean to put you on the spot. I just want to be sure we that you don't miss anything you would hope to say.
I think I'd also, for this next monologue, like to thank my fencing teacher because he's the one who really got me interested in this monologue and play.
And what's his name?
Mr. Murphy.
Well, great. Go ahead and tell us what you're going to do. And I see it's from a book. Oh, it's Cyrano de Bergerac. And, I wonder, what is it?
It's called The Ballad de Belair. It's a poem that he's making up when he's fencing with this guy.
I had a feeling we were going to go there. Elizabeth, thank you for being here. Elizabeth Irvin. And whenever you're ready, go ahead.
Lightly I toss my hat away. Languidly over my arm let fall the cloak that covers my bright array. Then out swords, and to work withal. A Lancelot in his lady's hall. A Spartacus at the hippodrome. I dally a while with you, dear jackal. Then as I end the refrain, thrust home. Where shall I skewer my peacock? Nay, 'twere better for you to have shunned this brawl. Here in the heart, through your ribbons gay? In the belly, under your silken shawl. Hark how the steel rings musical. Mark how my point floats light as the foam, ready to drive you back to the wall. Then as I end the refrain, thrust home. Ho for a rhyme. You're as white as whey. You break, you cower, you cringe, you crawl. Tack, and I parry your last essay. So may the turn of a hand forestall life with its honey, death with its gall. So may the turn of my fancy roam, free as for a time till the rhymes recall. Then as I end the refrain, thrust home. Refrain. Prince, pray to God that is lord of all. Pardon your soul, for your time has come. Beat, pass, fling your assailant a sprawl. Then as I end the refrain, thrust home.
Elizabeth, thank you for being here. It's great. I hope we'll come back sometime, too, as you learn more. Elizabeth Irvin, 13, 7th grade, Kappa,